Here we go. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to PureMomentum.com. It is my pleasure to welcome you to another teleseminar, especially on this topic, money and your couple's relationship. It is one that is dear to all of us as we move along and experience what we want to achieve in our lives. And since money is the number one conversation we always have about how do we fulfill our dreams, I am so delighted and so honored to have Blaine, who is a member of our Pure Momentum community. He brings warmth, friendship, and an open heart to all the conversations we've had in the past. And let me tell you a little bit about Blaine. Blaine has worked successfully with hundreds of married and cohabitating couples on changing the way they talk about money, make decisions about money, and use money in their lives. He has done specialized research and training in the area of impact of money issues on marriage. He has a passion for helping couples uncover what's blocking them in their relationship around money issues and is committed to produce concrete results in the lives of his clients. Blaine is a licensed marriage and family therapist in California who has been consulting individuals or consulting with organizations for almost 20 years. So, Blaine, I open it up to you now. Can you tell us how you got into this practice? What was your biggest motivator?
Thanks, Claudia. I'm really, really happy to be on this call today. It's a subject that I have a lot of passion for, as you mentioned, and where it kind of got started was both on a personal level in my own life as well as on a professional level in the work that I do counseling couples. I went through a painful divorce myself several years ago, and one of our biggest issues was money. And it wasn't so much the lack of the money. It was, although that was a challenge at times, it was more about what our beliefs were about it, how we valued different things. And at that time, I didn't understand that there could be a process where you could actually clarify your values with your partner in such a way that could help you align what I call now your money roadmap, where it's going to get you and what it's going to get you, and what time frame you're planning to execute to get there. So I went through that experience, and I came out of the marriage thinking there has to be a way to work this stuff out. And so I immersed myself in a lot of research on the psychology of money, the differences between the way men and women think, and at the same time, I was starting my practice as a licensed therapist in California, as you mentioned. And I started to I developed a model of communication around money, which has allowed, as you mentioned, hundreds of couples to work this stuff out. It isn't rocket science. It does take a commitment in the couple relationship to communicate in a respectful, open way. But most couples, depending on where they are in their relationship and where their pain is around money, they can turn this around. So I've seen miracles happen in my office where couples that were on the verge of divorce have been able to turn it around just using step-by-step processes to clarify what their values are around money and what that means in their daily life. And so that's what got me started, my own personal experience, and then being able to see how it can change in my work with couples professionally. Long answer to a short question. Hello?
Hello? Yes. I'm sorry, headset was away.
Okay. I just want to make sure you're hearing me.
No, I was hearing you.
Okay. Okay, good. I hope I wasn't muted.
Not at all. No, it wasn't you. It was my headset not put on correctly.
Okay.
But I was going to say, it definitely builds context to the issues that we're going through as couples. And why this topic is so important and dear to me is that while we're all working towards financial freedom and success, I'd like to know what your take is as far as what does money mean to men, or your their approach to money? How is it different for men and women from the experiences that you've shared? Perhaps to enlighten us to see, well, we process it differently.
Well, I think it's kind of a two-part question, and let me start with the meaning of money to different people, and whether you're male or female. For most of us, money means one or two of what I've identified as four primary ways that we use money. Some of us use money as a reward to play with. Some of us think of money as a resource necessary for survival. And some think of it primarily as a resource to help others with. Mm. And then there are others that believe that money is a resource for building long-term security, which is similar to survival but different. It's more about long-term investing and retirement accounts and things like that. Now, we all use money in those four ways in varying degrees. But you'll find if you talk with your partner that you probably think of money primarily two out of those four more than the other two. And unless you have a process to kind of talk about that in a way which doesn't make the other person wrong for having a different view. For example, I worked with a couple who, it was a man and woman, and the husband, he really saw money as a reward to play with. When he would get paid, he'd want to go out and celebrate. He'd want to go away for the weekend. He'd want to do fun stuff. And his wife saw it as a way to pay bills. And so he was feeling that they couldn't, he was feeling deprived, just like a little kid that, has gotten candy and can't eat it now. And she was feeling like he was being frivolous and he was being irresponsible. So they both had these judgments on each other. And when I worked with them on a process of communicating, why it was important for him to reward himself once he earned money, and why it was important for her to have economic security to feel at peace. And I reconnected them to their common goals, which were really to have a life where they could do both. And then we worked out a strategy where there could be enough for them to pay the bills and still be able to reward themselves so that both of their emotional needs could be met. So that's just a kind of a general overlay of, what money means to different people. A reward to play with, a resource for survival, a resource to help others, or a resource for long-term security. They asked about men and women. I have noticed that there are differences between the way... I actually like to use the terms masculine and feminine.
Sure.
Because it's not gender-specific. I do believe there are general differences between the masculine approach to money and the feminine approach. We all have both masculine and feminine nature, so it's not gender specific. Some men, as you know, have a more feminine nature, and some women have a more masculine nature. However, I found that the masculine approach to spending money is typically focused on things that bring more adventure and excitement into their lives, and many times are for big ticket items like trips, cars, boats, things which cost usually more than four figures. And the feminine approach to spending money is, again, this could be the guy or the girl in the relationship, but the feminine approach is more about immediate rewards and pleasure, like clothes, jewelry, cosmetics, spas, things, Starbucks, things that make them feel special. Or sometimes the feminine approach to spending money is centered around the home, around making the home a nurturing environment to live in. So the approaches are different. And so neither one is right or wrong. They're just different. So when I work with couples, I help them to understand the differences and then go through a process of aligning them and see how their masculine and feminine needs around money don't need to get in the way. They just need to be encompassed in what I'd call a meta goal. So you have your individual goals or individual wants. Then you need to create a meta want or a meta goal, which actually encompasses the emotional need underneath both of those things that the two people want. Does this make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. We have a and I want to remind everyone to please use the Q&A form on the web on the puremomentum.com teleseminar announcement page where you got the calling information. There's a Q&A form. We have a question here from Georgie from Toronto. It says, What are the most effective methods that a person can use to transform limiting beliefs around money? Clearly, here you mentioned the four areas, reward, resource, giving it to others or supporting others, or security. How does the issue of limiting beliefs affect the outcome, how you see money?
That's a really good question, and this was from
Georgie in Toronto.
I see. Can I ask, is Georgie on the phone?
We can unmute the.
Well,
the line.
I was just wondering if Georgie is a man or a woman.
Ah.
I was just curious.
Ah, we are going to unmute the lines, and Georgie, if you're there, please speak up. Go ahead. If you're on the web, then you can just submit your answer.
Okay, well that's fine. It's not essential. I think it's a really good question, because where do our beliefs come from around money, around most things in life? They start,
yes,
when we're really young, from our parents. And so I think I'm familiar with a lot of the work that you've done, Claudia, and I imagine a lot of people on the call have done work with Harv Eker. Is that fair to say?
A lot of people, yes.
Okay. And they're familiar with some of the work he does around identifying limiting beliefs. So where, you know, before we label it limiting or empowering, which could be the opposite of limiting, what I do with a couple is have them just write down, well, let me back up a little bit, because I have... when I look at money as a totality, I think an effective money management system has four pillars of this. And the first pillar is how we earn it.
Right.
The other is how we spend it. The other is how we save it. And the other is how we invest it. And those four pillars, we all have beliefs around those. Some of them may be limiting. Some of them may be empowering. And so what's really useful is to just sit down with your partner and write down, What do I believe around how money should be earned? What are my core beliefs around this?
Right.
And have your partner do the same. And then you have a dialogue around them, and we'll just take that one pillar and say, okay, is this belief that I have about earning money, is this serving me now? Is it really helping me now? And if the question is no, then we have to ask ourselves, why are we holding on to it? Is it based on some fear? And then we have to look at, do we have more fear associated with money, fear of losing it, fear of not having enough, as opposed to an abundant mindset around money? How do we shift then from a fear-based belief system around money to an abundance-based belief system around money? There's a lot of processes to do that now. Most of us have been doing enough personal development work to be able to come up. Claudia, you've been exposed to things around changing that, right? Shifting from one belief to another?
Absolutely. For me, it's been the experience of first understanding my relationship, and you hit it on very good points that I had never seen them that way. Is it a reward? For me, many times has been a resource insecurity, whereas because of my background and those limiting beliefs, or just basically beliefs that have been part of my tribe or part of my upbringing, have been money is a resource. And now the mind shift, as Georgie was asking, an effective method could be the possible mindset that money could be a tool,
mm-hmm,
that can bring you all those added things. But tell me then, you know, there are people... many couples have a hard time talking about money.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that when clearly it's an important issue? What have you found? Why is it so hard?
You're absolutely right. In research around what couples have difficulty talking about, the two issues that seem to be very difficult to have effective communication around are sexual issues and money. And it seems like they're very different, but I also can say that when I've seen a couple where there's been really unhealthy patterns around, say, spending secretly, and the other partner finds out, the sense of betrayal around it is much more serious sometimes than if the person had had an affair, had been unfaithful. So it's such a sensitive topic. And I think the reason why is because it's really has to do with the meaning of money. You know, what does money mean? It's, to me, it's an expression of what we value in life. A person, one person, for example, may value recreational activities, and the other may value creating a beautiful home. And then our values guide the way we manage our money. And so unless you have a process where you're able to, which doesn't take away something from your partner or the things they value, it's easy to have conflict. So the reason why a lot of the conversations unravel is because one person starts to feel like, you're not respecting what I value. You know, and what you value, for example, Claudia, what you value and what Fabrice values, some of them are very similar, but some of them may be different. And it doesn't, it's okay. It doesn't need to be the same, but you need to have a healthy way to talk about, okay, this is what I value, this is what you value. Let's see how we can create a lifestyle where we can, well, first of all, before we even go that far, I work with couples to do a ranking of what are the most important things they value in the couple relationship. And once you do that ranking and then you compare your list to his list, then you can start to look at, okay, we actually do have a lot of agreement around these things, we value these things, and how would that map into our money pattern? But here we have some disconnect. Now, how important, say one of mine is taking trips. That's what I value in my couple relationship. I want to take trips with my partner to expensive luxury resorts, okay? And that's like number 10 on my list. And my partner has something like that, but it's maybe number 20. And then we look at what's above 10, the first 9, and we see where we can get in sync. Now, if that 10 is a number 10, then it's not something I need to do every month necessarily, but I want to feel like my partner is valuing my need for that. And then what's also important when you look at what you value is look at why you value it. What's the meaning of it? So, for example, I did work with a couple where the guy wanted to buy a Harley. Any guys out there like Harleys? You can't.
Well,
it's okay.
If you do, you can. We can unmute the lines, but if you...
That's fine, that's fine. We can do that a little later, but yeah,
sure.
Say there's a lot of guys that like to buy Harleys for some reason. And so when working with this particular, he had his eye on this one. He'd been, you know, looking at it for years. It cost $20,000 to $25,000. She thought it was completely frivolous. They had no budget for it. Why did he want it? And he was becoming more and more insistent about it. So we looked at, okay, what does buying the Harley mean? And when we kind of peeled the onion back, it really came down to something fairly simple. When he was a kid, when he was 8 or 9 years old, he always wanted to have a bicycle, a red bicycle, a Schwinn. I forget the model name, but the Schwinn red bicycle that no one else had, so he could ride down the street in front of his friends' houses, and they would all think that he was cool. That's really what he wanted. There were three other boys in the family. He was the youngest, and he got the hand-me-down bikes. So he never got that red Schwinn, that brand-new red Schwinn. So he never felt, what his need was, he wanted to feel special. He wanted to feel the wind through his hair, the excitement of that, and he wanted to have the respect of his friends. And so when we looked at that, we went back and forth. When his wife heard this, she developed a lot of compassion for him because she could just picture this little boy that didn't get his red bike. That started to change the way she looked at his need. And then he started to realize, you know, maybe there's other ways that I can feel wind through my hair, that I can feel like I have something, that I'm being treated special, and that I have the respect of my peers. And so we worked out other ways he could do it without spending $25,000. So it's really amazing what happens when you go beyond what the thing is to what it means to that person, because usually there's some emotional need underneath the thing that they want to buy. So I'm not sure if this addresses your question, Claudia,
well,
but I thought it'd be a good example.
But I'd like to hear the stories. I really like, you know, in the conversations we've had is, you know, what are the most common issues that you've experienced when working with men and women and their relationship to money? And ultimately, we all want love. We all want to share a life together. And money, you know, in the state of California, it's, what, 60 to 70% divorce rate. I don't know how they conclude with those statistics if they count all the marriages throughout time or is it just for a period of a year. But the bottom line is that more and more people are separating, and statistics have shown that it's mostly the number one issue is money.
Mm-hmm.
I think number two is time, and number three maybe sex.
Mm-hmm. And children
at least
also.
or they're on the top three.
Mm-hmm.
But now, when you work with couples, do you cover all the issues of the holistic? Do you see the couple on a holistic, you know, basis, or do you see them mostly because they know they can come to you because they have financial issues? Are you a financial planner as well?
No, that's a good question. Actually, there are a couple of good questions in there. Let me just address the thing about divorce rate, and you're right, money is cited as the number one reason for divorce. And there's another study that I found really interesting by Psychology Today that, and I'm not sure how they calculated it, but they found that happy marriages or marriages that stay together in the long term, after a certain year in the marriage, I think it's after the fifth year, they become worth $115,000 more per year than unhappy marriages where there's unhealthy spending patterns and saving patterns. And so just in terms of sheer fiscal management, if you can work out your money issues in your marriage, and like I said, it's not just working out the money issues, it's working out the meaning behind the money, the meaning behind the issue, and clarify what values are really being expressed through the spending or the saving pattern. When you do that, you start to increase your net worth. So you actually do start to bring more abundance into your lives as a couple. And as we've been talking, and as I think you're very aware, Claudia, that our relationship with money influences almost everything in our life, especially in our marriage. There's one teacher around this that I've studied with, and she came up with this phrase, which I love, called how you spend your money is how you spend your life. And I think that's really true. So it's really important to figure this stuff out. So the other question that you had asked was related. I'm sorry, can you refresh my memory? Because I remember
The financial planning aspect,
yes.
It seems that it's important you bring it about. So you have them analyze what their values are and then what their priorities are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
do
no,
you also have them look at their finances?
I work in conjunction with financial planners. I'm not a financial planner. I have some training in it, but that's not my expertise. The way I look at the whole area of money management is there's three parts to it. There's the mindset around it. There's the strategy, and there's the tactics. The mindset is where I specialize, is creating a healthy mindset in the couple relationship where they can now communicate about what's important to them in a way which doesn't make the other person wrong, which respects the values of the other person and allows them to go through a step-by-step decision-making process about these four pillars, about how we're going to earn it, how we're going to spend it, how we're going to save it, and how we're going to invest it. Then financial planners are really good at strategy. Okay, now that we know how to work this stuff out, I do recommend, you know, a fundamental money management system, similar but different than what Harv Eker recommends. I don't necessarily recommend having 8 jars. I think it's a little complicated for most couples. I have basically a four bank account system that I recommend, which I can get into later if anyone's interested. But beyond what you do with, say, one of those is I guess what Harv would call the financial freedom account.
Yeah.
I look at it as long-term investing. And so that's where the financial planners can really help, because they can say, okay, what's your short-term strategy, what's your long-term strategy, and And then the tactics are really the tools of how to implement the strategy. And so those guys do a great job, and I'm associated with a few that I can refer people to, but I don't get any kind of referral fee from it. I just like the work that they do.
Sure.
And I'm more interested in, to me, you can have the best financial planner in the world, but if you can't communicate around it, I feel sorry for some of these financial planners because they tell me their horror stories of, I have these great investments, but these guys can't agree. They don't know how to talk about it without getting into a fight. And so that's where they refer people to me, and I work with them on developing a communication process to get through this. It doesn't have to become contentious. It's kind of, I guess my main message today is what you're arguing about is really not the main issue a lot of the time, that there's some meaning underneath it, and it doesn't take that much effort to peel the onion back and look through it. A lot of times it's helpful for a couple to have a neutral third party that's trained to facilitate the process, and that's where I come in, is helping them navigate it, because otherwise they're too much in the forest to have the objectivity.
Yes.
So that's how I work, and that's how financial planners do their work.
Right. So for purposes of our enlightenment here, for couples dealing with issues around money, could you give us some of the lessons that you've learned? What have been some of the worst case scenarios where we can grow and learn from? Some of the pitfalls, some of the things that we can avoid or work on before they become issues. Can you share some stories?
Sure. No, I'd be happy to. When I look at the most common problems that most couples have, I've created names for these type of folks.
Sure.
So there's about 8 of them. The first I would call the emotional spender. And this is the person that is spending money to meet some emotional need because there's something that's lacking either in their own personal life or in their couple life. And it's very similar to emotional eating or any kind of addictive or compulsive pattern where you just are trying to fill a gap. And a lot of times, I mean, I remember this one couple where she was basically a shopaholic. And I don't know if any of you can identify with that. There's nothing wrong with shopping. I think shopping's great, especially we're in the Christmas season, so I don't want to say anything bad about shopping. But it was just filling this void in her because all she really wanted to have was quality time with her partner at night and conversations and physical intimacy.
Mm.
And he was a workaholic. He enjoyed spending time with his friends at sports bars rather than be with her. And so she made this kind of deal within herself. Well, if he's going to do that, then I'm going to just treat myself. I don't want a divorce, but I'm unhappy. And that actually leads me to the second type of person, which I call the retaliatory spender, which is the person that says, well, if he or she's going to do that, then I guess I'm going to do this. And it sounds kind of childish, but we do it as adults. I've done it. But then you realize this is not the way to solve it. That kind of tit-for-tat type idea. The other problem that I see that comes up a lot is the hider. So this is the person that is hiding money in the relationship either because they want to buy something that they think the other person won't approve of, or they're actually planning an exit strategy and they think they'll need money to start their new life with. For either reason, it's not really, it really backfires because I know very few cases where the person doesn't find out, and then when the person finds out, it's like that betrayal I was talking about earlier, which feels like an affair. Related to the hider is the non-discloser. This is the person that is spending money without telling the other person. So one of the guidelines, and again, a lot of it is, I'd say the two biggest reasons that any of these unhealthy spending patterns come into play are the desire to avoid conflict with your partner, and a feeling that I deserve it because I'm not being fed in some other area of my life or my relationship. Now, either of those two reasons are there's ways to deal with that on an emotional level and through basically healing and basically connecting more with using your spiritual life to fill some of that. As far as like not wanting to bring up a spending desire because you think your partner won't approve, there's a way to learn to listen for both of you and communicate assertively where your partner can hear it and understand it. He or she may still not agree with what you want to spend, but there's a way that he or she needs to hear what that means to you. And for the most part, couples don't do that. Couples just, they blurt out what they want to spend in a way, trying to sell the other person, trying to convince the other person, or they become demanding, which usually puts the other person on the defense, and they never get to the meaning behind why the person wants to even buy that. But there is a way to do this. I've just seen it work with you know, many, many couples where one person learns to express themselves assertively, not aggressively, and the other person learns to listen empathetically. And it all comes back to love. I mean, if two people are together because they love each other, there's a way to listen from love and not from judgment and not from defense. And that's probably the biggest reason that couples don't talk about money is because they either go into other emotions that aren't based on love.
Mm. So other things come to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And some of it goes back to our childhood in terms of what we, you know, most of us know this, but most of our programming happens unconsciously from like 0 through about 7, sometimes later. And it's all what gets modeled by our parents or by the significant caretakers in our life growing up. And so if we grew up, for example, say you're a girl and you grew up seeing that your dad always provides and your mom always stays at home and they're not very happy in their marriage and there's resentment between them, but you grew up thinking that's what men do and that's what women do. Until I think this group, Peer Momentum, is very conscious of where our beliefs come from. And so, which is great because I think unless you're conscious of what your programming is, you can't change it.
Right.
And so you may think, huh. So maybe you go the other way. You say, I'm not going to rely, if you're a girl, I'm not going to rely on a man to provide for me because look at how my dad controlled my mom because he was making all the money in the relationship. I'm going to learn how to make money and never depend on a man. And then you get in, which has some strength to it. I mean, it helps you survive and helps you develop a lifestyle. There's nothing wrong with it per se, but then perhaps in your adult life you get involved in a relationship which leads to a cohabiting or marriage situation, and your partner is different. He wants to provide, but every time he tries, maybe you resist, or you there's a sense of control around it, which is a whole another issue of why people have money issues is. They associate the person that spends the money with the person, the person that earns the money is the person that can control the spending of it, which
right.
is a belief that a lot of us grew up with. And I believe in a loving, caring relationship. That belief is really talk about a limiting belief that will really
Absolutely.
Jeopardize the relationship. Or go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, or you get into a situation where you have one person earning significantly more than the other. I worked recently with this couple, very, very wealthy. He's a multimillionaire, and she's a single-digit millionaire. But he has a lot of real estate. He has a lot of investments, and he felt that they just had very, very different beliefs around how much they should spend for their lifestyle and who should put what portion into it. And because he had significantly more assets than her, he felt, and she basically moved into his house when they got married, he felt that he had the reins on his thing. So getting him to look at why were they even married to begin with is because of love. And when there's love between two people, there's a team that's created. And the team is composed, in this case, of two people, and they both share different responsibilities and play different roles in the relationship. Whether one person makes more or has more than the other doesn't determine their value in the relationship or doesn't determine what rights they have over spending or saving. The decisions around spending, saving, and investing and the earning of it need to be made collaboratively. It's not something that because one person has more, they have an entitlement to make those decisions. And a lot of men get into that, to be honest with you. That in a sense, because still in our culture, you know, men make more than a lot of women in these relationships I work with.
But that's actually my next question. Being a womanpreneur, what has been, if at all, your experience when women step up and actually start earning their own income? Georgie has stepped up again. Georgie is a lady. And she's saying, is it a good idea for a couple to have separate accounts? What about, and for me, it's setting boundaries. How do you feel about that?
I think it's really, really important that each person has a certain amount of discretionary income or money that they can spend on whatever they choose. I think that I'm an advocate of three accounts, his, hers, and ours. And then there's rules around what goes into ours, and how is ours spent. The ours is usually spent on the household expenses, but I think you can do it proportionally, especially if there is a big difference in income between you and your partner. You can make it a percentage goes into the ours account. I think for most couples that aren't independently wealthy yet, that are working and living on most of what they make, the percentage should be close to 80% needs to go into the hours account, and then perhaps 20%. But this is really between the couple to decide. Maybe they have enough disposable income that they could get by with putting 50% of each of their own salaries into the hours account, and have 50% for their own investments or desires that they want to pursue. But how does that sound to you, Claudia?
It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. I have a question here. What about having a shared account in which all can trust each other for the discretionary expenses? Where does trust come into the game? Or is it some rules or money rules? Do you advise money rules over trust?
I advise money guidelines.
Okay.
And when I say that, I think that there is a number that each couple should come up with for discretionary spending. So with some couples, it'll be anything over $100 we need to talk about.
Sure.
And we need to see I know I'm kind of harping on the same issue around values, but I just think it's so essential to sort of back up and say, why are we spending what we're spending? And if you don't have a plan about that's based on your values, what you value in life, you can spend 30, 40, 50, 60 years working and spending most of what you make and finding that you didn't spend it on the things that are most valuable for you in life. So it all starts, a lot of discretionary spending reflects some of what we value in life, but it's not done proactively, it's done more reactively. And so if you can step back and say, okay, let me look at this. Okay, I really do value I've used travel, or I could use home, you know, having a nice home. That's for me, that makes me feel happy and peaceful. It's like my sanctuary. And I think that based on that, we should spend a certain percent of our hours income on the home. But then, one of the people in the couple relationship say, well, I really value physical adventure, you know, taking treks and, going on say, sailing adventures and things like that, deep sea diving, you know, all kinds of things that cost thousands of dollars. So then you look at that and, you know, fundamentally the couple will have to determine, okay, what's the number? You know, what number on your values list is it at? And how does that, now, ideally, if you did these values lists and you want to just combine them both and do everything, and unless you have unlimited finances, it's very hard to do that. So you do have to make some hard choices. So then you look at it and say, well, what's more important? I want to honor your desire to, say, have these adventures that are going to cost $10,000 a year or more. At the same time, I want you to honor my desire to have nice furniture and nice home furnishings, which also cost at least $10,000 a year. So how can we do this now? Can we create a way to bring more abundance into our life where we have an extra $20,000 coming in? That's one approach. If that's very difficult, then you have to look at, okay, maybe we space this thing out. Maybe over time we furnish the house, and over time you have your adventures. And so it's all about learning to communicate with a goal in mind of how can we make this work together. As I think you know, Claudia, most of what we get out of life is in response to a question we're asking ourselves. At least that's what I found. I love, you know, Tony Robbins says, you know, our life becomes a response to a primary question. Mm. Have you heard that before?
No, I've heard you become your questions.
Ah, that's another good one. But yeah, no, and I years ago I did Date with Destiny with Tony Robbins, which is very similar to Chris Howard's Design Your Destiny, of course.
Right.
But you really look at a lot of what we get back in life is in response to a question that we're asking inside our heads. And so
let me ask you a question. When does it become a red flag for a couple to understand that they need to come and see someone? What is that tipping point?
Good question. When they're no longer able, I guess when it's becoming a right or wrong issue, you know, I feel like I'm right and you're wrong. When communication has gotten to those type of discussions, or when there's now distance and the couple starts to live parallel lives, if it gets too parallel, even counseling or even a workshop isn't going to help that much. But what I always look at when I start working with a couple, whether I do it in an individual setting or a workshop, is A, how committed are they to keep the relationship together, and B, do they have enough love left in their bank account to make it work? I mean, I worked with a couple who've been married 35 years, tremendous trust issues. There was chemical, alcohol dependency issues. There were all kinds of things, sleeping in separate bedrooms for more than a decade. And she had serious issues around the way he earned money and the way he spent it. And so it was very, very challenging because she really didn't have much love. She had more resentment than love left for him. But little by little, you know, we fanned that love back into enough of a flame that she was willing to give him another chance, and he was willing to make some serious changes. He got into a treatment program. He started to really look at why he was spending what he was spending and found better ways to make it, because he wanted a lifestyle that was, they were living, you know, they were going to debt every month. And so it's a really sad situation. But it
very
was
sad.
That, yeah, very tough. So they were, I wasn't sure they would actually stay together. But they finally mustered enough love from that bank account. I imagine most of everyone here has heard the term relationships like a bank account.
I had heard that from Barbara DeAngelis.
Oh, okay. There's a number of teachers that have used that, and I love it because it's really true that you're either making deposits or taking out withdrawals into your relationship account every day. The balance change fluctuates daily, just like a bank account. And so you have to kind of look at how are you depositing? What does a deposit look like? What does a withdrawal look like? So back to your question, when should a couple come to see help? When they're just beginning. I mean, ideally, I love working with couples that have a lot of love and commitment to the relationship, and they're just finding that it's really hard to talk about this stuff, and they're starting to get into blaming, you know, blaming, shaming discussions, and they want to get help. It can go, though, as far as the couple I just mentioned that have been married 35 years with a lot of trust issues. And even that, if there's enough desire to keep it going, if they had very strong religious beliefs about not divorcing, and that's probably the biggest reason that motivated them to try to get some help. So
Now, just from having had conversations, if you divorce is not ultimately the worst that can happen, right? It could be severe debt.
Mm-hmm.
In a relationship where money is really not discussed.
Mm-hmm.
How would somebody approach you? What if one part of the couple, what if one side is in agreement, understanding, and the other one is in denial? How do you handle that?
So in this scenario, the person that's in denial, well, first of all, in this scenario, does the couple still want to stay together?
That's a good question.
I mean, if they do.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I let me make some assumptions. Because, I mean, like I said just a few minutes ago, the two things are really important to work out through any of this. There needs to be enough love in the relationship to rekindle that spark back into a flame, and there has to be a motivation to make it work. And then I guess I'd add a third thing. There has to be a recognition that it's not working. If there's not so you mentioned one person in denial. If he or she feels that there's no problem, and I don't know what you're talking about all the time, it's hard. Now someone can come out of denial. The biggest thing that makes someone come out of denial is the possibility of losing their partner. I mean, that's what makes someone start to look at it. Because I've worked with couples where one person is absolutely convinced that it's, say, in this case, it was a man who thought it was all her problem, and that he didn't have any issues, and that it was all her stuff, and that she needed therapy, and all this. And as it turned out, he had some major issues. It wasn't until she said she really, what I did with them actually is make him see, not make him, but help him see that she felt her voice wasn't being heard. See, this is a big issue. I'm glad you kind of asked this, because a lot of times, a lot of the problems that I've seen in just general, you know, marriage issues are around this idea of voice. That if one person feels like their voice isn't being heard, isn't being recognized, it leads to distance, it leads to one of two things, fight or flight. The person leaves the relationship, or the person acts out in an angry, emotionally over-the-top way, which distances the other person even more. So it's really important to honor the voice in each person. And with this one couple, when he finally got that she felt she had lost her voice in the marriage and how important that voice was, and basically I worked with him on seeing how when he's not heard, when he feels like no one's listening to him, when he feels like his point of view is not being honored, how does he feel about it? You know, he really started to open up. But it's tough if someone doesn't have the idea that the other person's voice matters.
Right. So let's say that somebody was to come to you. What specific benefits or results can a couple expect from working with a therapist? Whether the two parties are in it because they love each other or because perhaps it gets really difficult, like with that scenario of one in denial and one not. I mean, how do you work with a couple?
Basically, I start with a diagnosis of those four areas, earning,
yes,
spending, saving, and investing, and where are they in alignment and where are they out of alignment. Generally, a couple isn't out of alignment in all four areas. So I really try to magnify what they're good at. I mean, I worked with one couple that they both earn well and they both have the same beliefs about who's earning it, and they don't have any issues around the person that earns it, you know, has the right to spend more. It was really, really good about earning. But they had really different beliefs about saving versus spending. And so we then looked at, okay, what is, again, we do kind of a values alignment where first I clarify, you know, what are the values about around the saving, around the spending, and then how can we start to bring this into alignment? So by using the, you know, by doing a values alignment around money, by doing a reconnection to their fundamental love and their what is connecting them as a couple, by getting them to look at their own masculine and feminine tendencies around money, by going through a very systematic process, I've seen a dramatic change occur in the way a couple uses money in their marriage. They turn this area of conflict into a positive tool, and it actually starts to make the marriage better, richer, more in material terms and emotional terms. Couples shift from being the effect of money to being the cause over it.
Yeah.
And my experience working with couples over the years on money issues is that resolving differences in this area also increases the trust, the intimacy, and a deeper connection. I had this one couple where both very, you know, capable, you know, smart people, professionals. She had been laid off from her job, and she was depressed about it, and she was at home a lot. And she just started playing around on the internet with online poker. She had never really been into it before, but she was very smart at math. She's an engineer, and she figured using her wits, she could make some money while she was between jobs. So she started in the beginning to make a little bit of money, and then it started to go the other way. And then she got into the psychology of gambling, which is basically, I can make it back. This resulted in $72,000 of debt.
Wow.
And she did it all on her own credit card. Then she was home, she was getting the mail every day, so her husband never saw the bill. But at some point, I don't know how exactly, he found out, and he was furious because, you know, this was a sense of betrayal. The marriage almost fell apart. There was a lot of pain and distance between them, and I helped them look at the reasons behind her gambling and what the needs weren't being met, and then help them find ways to meet those needs without compromising their financial security. So the results of this was the marriage stayed together and trust was restored. And then I helped them to develop a more transparent way of communicating, which has led to, first of all, she got a new job fairly soon after that. Their net worth has now increased. It's been about a year now, has now increased by more than 100K since I worked with them. And they're just extremely happy, and they're referring other people to me now because they were. What happened was, you know, when it came down to it, he still loved her, and he wanted to trust her, and she desperately wanted to earn his trust back, and she realized that she had just gotten really hooked on something that was unhealthy, something that came from an emotional void, and when that she didn't need to fit to. Do it that way, defeat it that way, it worked out. So I know our time is limited. So
yes, we have 5 minutes left, and I have a couple questions here. And then I would love for you, if you have anything to offer to our listeners, I would love for you to make it up.
Sure.
We have about 5 minutes. I have a question here from Belinda in Boston. She says, we started discussing the eight types. First question is eight types of, can you define that, eight types of what?
Yes, I apologize. I only got through four of them.
Yes.
These are the eight types of unhealthy money managers, you might call them.
Okay, unhealthy money managers.
Unhealthy money managers. Emotional spender, the retaliatory spender, the hider, the non-discloser. That's as far as we got.
Then
I have
five.
The guilty betrayer. This is the person that actually has compulsive, you know, non-disclosing or hiding, and is feeling really, really guilty, and because of that guilt, starts to do other things in the relationship. Then the other person finds out, and the sixth one is the victim of the betrayer, who, you know, is basically saying, now that you've done this, I'm going to hold this over your head for a really long time. You've destroyed our marriage. I worked with one couple that $150,000 in secret investing that turned out to be a scam almost destroyed their relationship, and she was very much into victim, and she didn't see her power in the relationship, so she anyway, I won't go into it, but we
sure.
work through a process to change that from victim. The seventh is the blamer, who's kind of doing, it's kind of self-explanatory, but basically blaming the other person for creating the problems around money in the marriage or the relationship. And then the distruster, who basically doesn't trust, even though the other person's not doing anything, maybe he or she did years ago, they haven't since, but everything around money, this person doesn't trust them anymore because of the betrayal in the past. So those are all really ugly things to look at. And
yes.
Unfortunately.
Blame,
yes.
The question is the for money, and we'll go into it for a minute because I want to give you some time because Georgie in Toronto is wondering how to find someone like you. But what were those four account money management systems that you talked about?
The first would be the what you need for day-to-day living, your necessities account.
Sure.
The second would be your long-term savings, which has rules around when you spend it.
Sure.
The third would be a combination of recreation, and because I find that most couples do spend, and recreation / entertainment.
Sure.
And then the fourth is the long-term retirement or financial freedom account, which never gets, the principal never gets spent, only the interest gets spent from that.
Right.
And
so,
and what I, oh, just on a note on that, I find that most couples can truly live, if they work at it, on 70 to 80% of what they make. Believe it or not, it takes a lot of belt tightening in the beginning, but their lives become a lot more free after that. Anyway,
well,
just as a
side
note,
I,
it's hard.
But once you have the discipline, you can do that. I believe it. I know it because I do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you give us, Blaine, what can you offer to our listeners? How can they get a hold of you? Do you have any special offer for them today?
Yes, I'm really excited to work with any individuals or couples that want to get clarity around this issue in their lives. And what I'm offering today is a free personal consultation over the phone or in person if you happen to live in the Bay Area, particularly in the East Bay. I have an office in Pleasanton, California, in the East Bay. But I do most of this initially over the phone, up to 90 minutes. It's valued at $397. I will offer this for free to Peer Momentum listeners. And in this consultation, I will diagnose your particular money issues, where you're in alignment or out of alignment, or if you're looking at a past relationship and trying to learn from it, if it's a single person that wants to figure this out, I will also spend the time with them to work on it. And I offer tools in the consultation to start to create a plan to change the way you deal with money in your relationship. So the way I'm offering this is I have a toll-free number, toll-free in the U.S. It's an 800 number. So if any of you are able to write this down, and maybe we could post on
the website,
your website,
sure.
Yeah. It's 888-899-7424, which is the numbers for the words rich, R-I-C-H. So I'll repeat it, 888-899, and then the word rich, R-I-C-H, or the numbers for that are 7424.
Excellent.
And I'm offering this for the next 3 days, 36 hours. Is that 3 days? Yeah, 36 hours is 3 days. So today is Thursday. So through Saturday night, if you can call and leave a message on that, I will call you back within 24 hours to reserve the time for your session.
We have a lot of callers from the Canadian area. Can you give them your direct number? In case they cannot access the 888.
Okay. Yes, I can give my office number, which is area code 925-600-8084. In other words,
do that again, please. 925?
925-600 or 600-8084.
8084.
Extension 1. So you'll hear a voicemail come on by a woman's voice, my business partner, and just press extension 1, and that'll be my voicemail.
Absolutely. One last question, Blaine.
Sure.
On average, how How many sessions does a couple need and to work with you?
It depends on where they're at in their situation. I know it's a very general response, but it's so individual and personal. I would say at the minimum 4, and I've worked with couples over a period of 6 months. I do also offer intensive trainings, which usually take place over a 2.5-day period, and I've had couples just go to that training, completely turn their marriage or their relationship around and not need any further consultations and be on the way toward greater abundance and emotional health in their marriage. So it can either be done over a short 4 sessions up to, like I said, 6 months, which would be once a week, up to a weekend experience, which is very intense, but does actually get to the root of the problem and turn it around.
Excellent. Well, Blaine, thank you very much. I think we've learned a lot of things about what came through for me is the values and how important it is to be aligned and to have those conversations and to understand, you know, where do we come from? How do we stand? So thank you very much for joining us on Pure Momentum. There will be a recording of this call within about an hour.
That's great.
So you can access it, and we will definitely forward it to the rest of the community who couldn't be on this at this hour, but they will be receiving it shortly.
And I just want to say that I'm very, very grateful for this chance, because I just believe that this work can truly transform this problematic area into one of happiness. And when I've seen couples cry when they've turned their relationship around and been able to actually get on a route in which they can really see progress, not only in their money situation but in their connection, it's amazing. It's hard to even put a price on it. So if anyone on the call is feeling like this might be of help to them, please contact me. I just have a passion for seeing the miracles happen, and I know that they can.
I believe so too. Well, thank you for that offer too, guys. If you are on this call and are still on this call at this time, there is a calling. There is a reason why you're in it, and take advantage of Blaine's offer. It's a very generous offer. I've had conversations with him here in my living room, and he's full of heart and full of intention to support everyone. Thank you, Blaine, again. And I want to wish everybody a happy holiday. We are relaunching our book club, 6 book series, within the coming week. I hope you can be part of it to extend your network and connections with the rest of the Pure Momentum community. So thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you,
Happy holidays. Thank you,
Thank
Blaine.
You, everyone.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.